Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Principled Podcast by LRN, celebrating 25 years of helping companies elevate their behavior. My name is Ben DiPietro. I'm the editor of LRN's E&C Pulse newsletter. With me today is Stephanie Davis, Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer for Volkswagen Group of America. Hello, Stephanie. Thanks for taking time today.
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for having me.
So tell people about the path you took to wind up doing ethics and compliance in North America for Volkswagen. And I should mention you were not at Volkswagen until after the emissions problems, so that people are aware of that.
Correct. I started in my Volkswagen role in May of 2017. So it's been quite a whirlwind for the last 2 years. Obviously, Volkswagen is under a monitorship as part of the diesel crisis. And I came in right as the monitorship started. And God willing, the monitorship piece will be over by June of 2020. But my role with Volkswagen started a little prior to 2017. I was working for KPMG in the Forensic Investigations Department, and I was the director there. And basically, we were trying to identify fraud issues with the buyback program that Volkswagen undertook as part of the diesel settlement. And so I got to know quite a few of the Volkswagen employees during that time and really liked the organization. And kind of in an offhanded comment to our general counsel one day in a very informal meeting, he asked me if I'd ever be willing to come in-house because I do have a legal background. And I said, you know, I'm really happy at KPMG. They've been really good to me. I'm on the partner track. But if you ever want a chief compliance officer, give me a call. Because at that time, Volkswagen Group of America did not have a chief compliance officer. And amazingly, they called me a few weeks later and said, you know, we've already talked to KPMG. They're letting you out of your contract. You start Monday. We really need you. And it was one of those times when it was all your cards are on the table and you say, look, my entire career, I've been working on ethics and compliance topics ever since law school and even in law school. And it was the opportunity of a lifetime to come in and really build something from the ground up. And really, you know, in some ways, I've had a very easy go of it as the compliance officer, because, you know, there's not many chief compliance officers who can point to a $30 billion issue and say, look, this is why we need a better compliance program, right? So in those ways, I think I've had a much easier go of it than someone else who doesn't have that to point to. And I used to say in the very beginning that the diesel crisis was going to be the best thing that ever happened to the company, because it really did mandate change. And in a time when the automotive industry is changing faster than we have ever seen before, we really have a very real reason to change and have made major investments in electrification and automated driving. And it's really been a phenomenal opportunity. And I've been so grateful to be here for that change.
So as we said, you joined VW after the emissions problems were discovered. And part of your job is to build an E&C program for them. Where are you on that journey? What changes have you implemented since you've been there? And what's next on your to-do list?
I think that you always need to be looking at an E&C program as one that's evolving and changing with the times. You know, as we look forward on the compliance side, as we become more of an electric vehicle company, it's going to be less long-term about the emissions issues and more long-term about, for example, ethical sourcing of cobalt. 70% of it comes from the DNR. And there have been examples in the past where companies have unwillingly sourced cobalt using child trafficking and issues like that. So there will, as we evolve, our compliance issues will evolve. I think third-party risk is going to be on the top of my to-do list every day until I retire. But, you know, at Volkswagen Group of America, we've never had an ethics program before. And I was hired as the chief compliance officer. And about a year into it, I went to my boss and I said, I'd like to change my title. I'd like to be the chief ethics and compliance officer, because I really do believe that you can't have one without the other. And we were doing so much of a focus in my organization on, you know, the ethical business mindset and really the trust that imparts in employees, and really saying, you know, the company wants you to make ethical business decisions. It's been a fascinating conversation and one that hadn't really gotten off the ground prior to my being here. And so on a compliance side, we now have a code of conduct that is group-wide. The Volkswagen Group is 650,000 employees worldwide. It's the largest automaker in the world. And so to have one code of conduct worldwide where we say this is how we do business was a huge undertaking and one that I was proud to be a part of.
So you talk a bit about the changing culture to a certain extent, and that's not easy. You need the help of other business units to do that. How is that relationship between ethics and compliance and those other units changed since you've come on board and the emissions has happened?
I think we push that it's everyone's responsibility, that if I'm the only person in the company who cares about ethics and compliance, then we're going to fail. So I talk a lot about how in our first 90 days, I sat down with every senior executive in the company to try to understand their business and try to get to know them as a person. I really do believe that relationships are incredibly important on the compliance and ethics side. If I understand your risks to your individual part of the organization and what your goals and KPIs are, then I can give you better advice and better counsel as to where the compliance and ethics and risk pitfalls might be. And if I understand your business goals, I can say, okay, you know, solution A doesn't work for X, Y, or Z. However, here's how we can get the same outcome ethically and compliantly. So that was incredibly important. And I encourage my entire team to really work within the business units as well. So we are nothing without the cooperation of our business partners. And, you know, obviously compliance works very closely with legal and HR classically, but we also work very closely with our sales colleagues and our finance colleagues and our logistics colleagues. So, you know, my team likes to make a joke that if you invite any of us to any meeting, we will show up because we just want to be in the room and we want to make sure that you see our presence. And for an organization that's never had a large compliance and ethics team before, we just try to get out there and really be a part of the organization so that it's a normal part of the business to see compliance in a meeting as opposed to being, oh my God, why is compliance here?
Has that changed the relationship with the board and executive people as well? Or can you talk a little bit about the transformation there?
At the time I said, you know, I'd like to meet with the board twice a year. I've been asked to meet with the board every time they've been here since I got here. So I always have that touch point with our board and our board members. And at this point, it's pretty common to see me in the room helping with strategy discussions, helping discuss new initiatives, because again, we have established ourselves as a voice for the organization and a team that is really working to better the organization. There are pendulum swings. And of course, you may say that, you know, for example, in a company that's under a monitorship, the pendulum may swing one way or the other while you're trying to fix things. But if we understand what the company's goals are, then we can help make those rational business decisions that also fall within the guidelines and the parameters of compliance and ethics and risk.
So up to now, we've been talking about the things you've been doing internally. Obviously, there was a big reputation hit to the company as a result of all this, and you've got to rebuild trust with people. What are you guys doing to do that, and how far along on that journey would you say you are?
No matter what is going on in a business, you always need to be working to build the trust of your customers, especially when you have lost the trust of some of your customers. Volkswagen has just announced our new Drive Bigger campaign. The new campaign is that when you drive something bigger than yourself, you change the destination. And what we really mean by that is that we have pledged to be carbon neutral as a company by 2050. We as a company worldwide have signed up for the Paris Carbon Accords, which I think is a pretty amazing thing for us to say that we are going to do, acknowledging our role in the environmental crisis that we are under. Volkswagen Group of America signed to the new California Air Resources Board numbers saying that we are going to continue with the Obama era regulations of better emissions for our cars every year, as California has asked us to do, that we were one of four automotive companies in the United States that did that.
Before you got to Volkswagen, you started with an academic background. How does that help you now in doing your job? And what aspects from your academic life do you apply to your role as a CECO?
I think that the big use is just questioning. Why are we doing something that way? How is it, you know, that's why it's always been done. I think it's a trope for a reason, but I bring a background from outside of the automotive industry. So the fresh eyes and looking at things differently has been incredibly helpful. I'll also say that, you know, nothing is black and white in academia, especially in the law. You know, there's so much gray area. that I do understand that while I do not necessarily always see things in black and white, one of the things that we may need as we move forward is more hard lines in the sand of what's okay and what isn't. And so we work on frequently asked questions documents, for example, where we actually go into scenarios for discussion and scenarios of what we should do. And we've started something called the Compliance Chronicles, which one of the things we hear with our whistleblower system is, you know, I call the whistleblower system and they never tell me what happens. Well, you know, these are confidential investigations and we can't, especially when you're an anonymous caller, we can't call you and tell you what happened. But we've started adapting whistleblower investigations in a way that is sent out on a monthly basis of like one specific thing that happened based on an investigation that we did, and, you know, anonymizing everything. And they're really, really well received. So I think the academic background isn't as important as the varied background and really bringing a new set of eyes into the room.
One of the big topics in corporate world now is diversity and inclusion. How does Volkswagen define those terms? What are you guys doing in that area? How do you measure progress? And who are you sharing all that information with?
So the Volkswagen Group globally has set 5 new group essentials out. And one of our group essentials, one of them is we care for the environment, we, not me. And one of them is we live diversity. And we had mandated worldwide discussions in every business unit had to have a conversation with their teams about what diversity meant to them and what we could be doing better and how to move forward. You know, in Germany, they have quota laws around how many, you know, female board members there are for publicly traded companies. The United States hasn't gotten there yet, but they are making many strides to try to bring that diversive background, whether it's gender or ethnic background or other diversity, into the room, because I think it really does make it a better business. And personally, when I built my C&E team here at Compliance, Ethics, and Risk, we have a very diverse team. And I think it makes us a better compliance team because you have to be able to see things from different areas. If everyone in the room has the same background, then everyone's just going to agree and they're never going to think of new ways to do business. They're never going to think of new innovation. And so diversity makes the company better. And I think we see that time and time again. So it's huge on my list of priorities personally. And I believe it's a priority for the company as well.
Another big area I'm sure you guys are involved in is artificial intelligence, machine learning, as companies move toward autonomous vehicles. What type of ethical guidelines are in place for the use of these things, and how big of a risk area do you see this, and how much do you expect it to grow in the future?
I think AI, in this case, the automotive industry may be a little ahead of the legal rules and regulations. And so in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the beginning of the internet where we didn't really know where it was going. And I think we can all agree that it's sort of gone off the rails in many cases. So we have to be really careful on what we're really striving towards. And I truly believe that there do need to be ethical guidelines for autonomous vehicles, but we are working with a coalition of other car companies to try to determine that together, because I believe it's really important in this particular case that we all kind of come to agreement on what we want to see with our automotive vehicles and what we really want to avoid. Because again, I think that we are probably a bit more advanced than the legal regulations. So in many ways, we're driving blind. So, you know, we're trying to make the right decisions for the company and for our employees and obviously for our customers. And I do believe that is where the automotive industry is going. But at the same time, it's not just automation, it's electrification, it's ride sharing programs, it's, you know, people are owning cars differently. So it's a major, major area of change right now. The entire automotive industry is changing on every single platform. So, you know, we strive to make ethical decisions in all of those areas.
And obviously coming off the emission settlement, this has got to be having a heightened importance for you guys as well, I would think.
Yeah, I think there will remain scrutiny with our organization in a way that other car companies may not have. But frankly, I'm grateful for that scrutiny. I think that we have admitted our guilt and we have certainly paid, obviously financially, for it. And we are making major, major changes to the organization as a whole because of it. And again, the $20 billion investment in electric vehicles, I'm not sure we would have made that today if the diesel scandal hadn't happened. So we are actually ahead of other car companies that will end up becoming electric as well. So I'm very confident that we are on the right path.
Great. I want to thank you so much for your time, Stephanie. I appreciate you talking with us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.